to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show here today. And we've got some technical glitches to take care of this morning, but I think we've got everything running right now. Welcome to our Saturday Look Back Roundup. Our phone number is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. The chat room is open, the webcam is running, and we are ready to rock and roll here. What a crazy, crazy week it has been here. And obviously, the big stories, we got a lot of stuff to cover. Tomorrow's the anniversary of the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. It's the 46 years since that horrible day in Dallas that just changed the course of history in the United States of America. And a lot of people think it was a coup d'etat that put the nation on the road to this terrible fascist dictatorship that we are living under right now. And we're also covering the emerging story, continues to emerge, about ClimateGate. Basically, it has the lid has been ripped off of the global warming hoax. The global warming cult stands exposed for collusion to sell this idea of drastic human-caused global warming, requiring us to surrender our freedoms and more of our money to people like Al Gore, because they claim that they will be able to save us from ourselves. And frankly, I don't need to be saved from myself. I think I'm in very good hands right now. Thank you very much indeed. And of course, we're covering the End the Fed rallies across America. And there are going to be a lot of rallies. We've got a list of websites and locations posted at whatreallyhappened.com. Please find one of these rallies tomorrow if you don't have anything else going on there. And please go on out there and join those protests. If you can't find one, make one. Get out on a street corner with the sign. It's time to end the Federal Reserve. We've had three private banks. All three of them have almost destroyed the country. Enough is enough is enough is enough is enough. It's time to end the Fed. So, all right, let's talk about a few things. Obviously, with regard to ending the Fed, Ron Paul's audit the Fed bill, Resolution 1207, got out of committee, got passed out of committee yesterday. Representative Mel Watt, Democrat of North Carolina, boy, we had a caller into the show yesterday, was reporting, was just pounding to get this amendment added, which would have basically gutted the entire bill, would have just turned it into a showpiece. See, we're auditing the Fed, but we didn't find anything, and so forth and so on. But the Watt amendment went down in flames. I think even Congress recognizes that the American people are angry, and it's time to find who they're going to be angry at. And it's coming down that wonderful letter from that lady in Arizona that was read on the Glenn Beck show yesterday, linked in his website. We linked to Glenn Beck's website for this letter. I think it's come down to this point. I think most people in Congress understand. We're either going to allow the American people to vent on the Federal Reserve that created this economic mess, or we're going to be venting on the government itself. And so now I think we're seeing the government realizing that maybe throwing the Federal Reserve to the wolves, or more accurately to the people, is the best option they're looking at right now. And so this bill is out of committee. It's heading for the Congress itself. There is no question it will pass in the House. The real fight will be in the Senate. They have, it looks like they've got 30 sponsors in the Senate. So that's well on its way to having the majority. Now, whether Obama will sign it or veto it remains to be seen. And Obama, well, we all know he's a disappointment. He has not done anything consistent with reviving the long-term economy. And, it's an ugly, ugly, ugly situation here. And so interestingly enough, everybody who signed up with Mel Watt and Barney Frank, about another eight congressmen, if you look at their backgrounds closely, they're all people connected with the Federal Reserves. Many of them are on the Federal Reserve's payroll even now, double-dipping, as it were. They're getting dividends, or they're getting benefits, or they're getting deferred salary, whatever it is they're calling. But here's the point. Here's the point. The Federal Reserve understands they will not survive a full, complete, and honest audit. When the American people realize just how much wealth the Federal Reserve has absorbed from the American taxpayer for simply printing up paper money and allowing us to play with it, I think the American people are going to get very, very angry. They should be angry at the government that allowed it to happen. We had two of these central banks before that almost wrecked the country, and Congress went ahead and did it again, a third time. That's their three strikes right there. They talk about the three strikes rule, three strikes and you're out. Congress had their third strike back in 1913. So this bill is definitely moving on. And interestingly enough, though, Obama came out and asked Americans for patience on the economy. And I don't know about you. He's had a whole year to do something, anything, that's going to make life better for us. And all we have seen is a continuation of the same policies that created this incredible poverty and unemployment. As I was telling you yesterday, Barack Obama has it in his legal authority to pick up the phone and tell the Treasury to start issuing U.S. currency, government-issued currency, available for Americans to use for commerce without having to be borrowed from a bank to begin with. And he won't do it. He lacks the courage of an Andrew Jackson or an Abraham Lincoln or a John F. Kennedy. He won't do it. So when Obama asks Americans for patience, basically he's just saying, you know, don't tar and feather us yet. We need a little more time to finish looting the nation and shoving it in our pockets. That's what he's really asking for. Okay? I'm sorry. No more patience. I'm reminded of that cartoon of the vultures sitting in the tree, say, you know, patience, my gluteus. I'm going to go out and kill something. I think we're at that point. No more patience. We've been patient. Americans have been patient. We've watched our economy sinking for the last 30 years, and we've listened to the platitudes of the Congress and the president saying, we're working on it. We've got a plan. We'll make it happen. We'll fix it. A little more patience, please. We're out of patience. We are out of patience. That lady from Arizona who wrote that letter to Glenn Beck yesterday said it for all of us. We are fed up. We are coming. We are coming. Now, everybody, including the very well-off, are starting to get a little upset with just how out of control our fascist economy has been. Apparently, there is a movement within the shareholders of Goldman Sachs to basically go into the next stockholders' meetings and say, you don't get those bonuses everybody's talking about. You don't get that $500,000 average bonus check. You don't get that the $20 billion that they've set aside for bonuses that came out of the money we, the taxpayers, gave to them to save them a year ago. And now all of a sudden they're rich, 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 and they're writing themselves bonuses. The stockholders are saying, you don't get those bonuses, not after the performance. You know, now the stockholders aren't going to say return that money to the taxpayers. They're going to say divide it up among the stockholders. This should be dividends. This should be earnings to those of us who own the stocks. Of course, most of the top players at Goldman Sachs have stock options, so it's really, whether it's an increased dividend or a bonus, they're still going to wind up with the money anyway. So anyway, the shareholders at Goldman are definitely upset. Now, if it sounds like I've been distracted for the last few minutes, I am. We're sorting out. We've had some changes here, and I did some goofs setting up our Saturday configuration. But everything's running now, so if you want to call in, the phone number is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We're going to be talking about, obviously, John F. Kennedy. We're going to be talking about the economy. We're going to be talking about climate gate. And to sort of segue into that, I want to come up with this announcement. We've got a brand new appointed, not elected, president of the European Union, Herman Van Rompuy, which, of course, annoyed Tony Blair because he wanted that job. He was campaign. He wanted to be the first president of the European Union, and he didn't get it. Well, this new EU President Rompuy has announced that 2009 is the first year of global governance. There you are, people. That's the agenda, the global governance again. And the push for global governance was based on three pillars: the global warming crisis, the global pandemic, and the global financial crisis. And all three of those pillars are cracked and crumbling. We're going to be taking a sledgehammer to what's left of them after we come back from these words from our sponsors. Join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We will be right back.
Can we talk? Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means...
Which means they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're going to go right to the phones. We've got Mark in Oregon. Aloha, Mark. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Morning, Michael. I'm a first-time caller, and I just want to thank you for your great show.
Well, thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Michael, you know, in honor of John Fitzgerald Kennedy and all that he gave for the country, all that he was trying to do to... keep the country right before it ever got to the point where it is now. I'd like you, if you could, to give us your knowledge on what his activities were per se toward abolishing the CIA. And beyond
finish your question.
Yeah, and beyond that, if you have any of the recordings that were made of President Kennedy's speeches during the time that he was president relative to secret societies, those who do things in secret to destroy the country, essentially. I'd sure appreciate hearing that.
Okay, I don't have any of those speeches queued up to play. I mean, I've been hearing the secret society speech all over the place for the last couple of days, and everybody, of course, tries to twist it to their particular agenda. A lot of people are using it to basically attack the Freemasons, and they don't understand that what Kennedy was really talking about were more organizations like Skull and Bones, which he saw as a to a lesser extent, the Federal Reserve itself. He was a lifelong enemy. Now, regarding the Central Intelligence Agency, a lot of presidents have had to deal with the fact that the CIA, while nominally being part of the executive branch and supposedly being the president's intelligence agency, that it tends to go rogue every once in a while. You'll get, CIAs within the CIA which are off running their own little operations. It's a phenomenon that is often called the true believers, where you'll get people in these very high positions in the intelligence agencies who see the elected government as temporary help. They come in, they mess around, they go home, they retire, we get a new batch. And the long-term career officials who are there at CIA for 20, 30, 40 years, they tend to see themselves as really more the government than the elected leaders. It's a bad model, but they do. J. Edgar Hoover used to call his office at the FBI the seat of the U.S. government because he was there for president after president after president after president. Now, as far as the CIA is concerned, the main schism between John F. Kennedy and the Central Intelligence Agency revolved around the Bay of Pigs. Now, what happened there, the United States had backed the previous president of Cuba, a guy by the name of Batista. They had gone in, the CIA was set up in Cuba, they were using it as kind of their base of operations for the entire Caribbean because it was geographically advantageous. They were down there, they were outside technically U.S. jurisdiction, they had all kinds of facilities and camps down there. Batista curried favor with American corporations like United Fruit and PepsiCo by selling Cuba's agricultural produce at way below market rates. So Pepsi and United Fruit and other companies like that, they made huge, huge, huge profits while the Cuban people were sinking further and further into absolute poverty. Batista also courted the American organized crime families. Have you ever seen the third Godfather movie? is very much tells that story, where the mafia families who were getting a little uncomfortable at some of the encroachment into Las Vegas, where the government was saying, "Man, we got to kind of get some of the gambling and drugs and prostitution back under control." So they said, "Okay, well, you know, Cuba's just 90 miles away. Steamships go there all the time. The airplane is coming along. That's a convenient way. We'll start building all our huge hotels in Havana Harbor." But it was a wide open town. You could do anything there. You know, prostitution was open and legal. And it was the days of the donkey shows. You could get any drugs you wanted. It was just a wild, wild, wild town. Great, great party town. And, you know, Batista got his piece of the action, and it was obviously very destructive for the local community because the young people were being lured into these kinds of occupations. And it was just this, you know, it's the same sort of thing you see happening in the area around the Las Vegas Strip, where there's some social consequences to all the gambling and everything going on. But it was only more so in Havana, Cuba. Well, pardon me. The oppression of the Cuban people finally reached a point where Castro was able to basically pull together his revolution and put so much pressure on Batista that Batista finally bugged out with almost no warning. And that was the fall of the Batista government. Batista and his henchmen went into exile in South Florida. And they got permission to move into South Florida because the CIA had said, "Look, these are our people. They've been helping us project power into all the other South American countries." All the dirty tricks that were going on in South America, the CIA was doing, Havana was the jumping-off point to give the U.S. mainland deniability. So they all went back to Florida. That's where the Cuban population in Florida from today comes from. They are all the families of Batista's government officials who were kicked out. So Castro comes in, and he actually approached the United States about normal diplomatic relations. And the U.S. came back and said, "Well, if you'll give us the same price breaks on the sugar and agricultural produce and let the mafia in there and let our CIA come back in there, we'll talk about it." And Castro said, "I can't do that. That's what I promised the people I was going to fix. We were going to get rid of the donkey shows and the drugs and the gambling and the mafia and the CIA. And we've got to sell our produce at fair market prices because we got to get some money back to the people." And the United States said, "Well, to heck with you, buddy. We're going to declare an embargo and we're going to starve you into submission." And ironically enough, it was that embargo that drove Castro to link up with the Soviet Union. Talk about a major foreign policy blunder. You know, Castro didn't go to the Soviet Union to become part of the Soviet bloc. The United States drove him there with their hardline approach here. So the CIA starts organizing a counter-invasion. They get together with the Cuban brigades, all these people in Cuba who were Batista supporters, and they wanted to go back and restore Batista to power. And they got together with the CIA, who wanted the Cuba back, and they even had support from organized crime, who wanted their hotels. They'd invested millions of dollars in building those hotels in Havana, and they weren't getting the return from them. So they all set up to create this invasion at the Bay of Pigs, and they went to Kennedy, and they said, "We know that the Cuban people have changed their mind about Castro. They hate him. He's a commie. He's worse than Batista. When we invade at the Bay of Pigs, the Cuban people are going to come down to the beach, and they're going to join with us, and we're going to march on Havana and take Castro out and pluck his beard out one hair at a time on national television." And Kennedy said, "Well, okay, if the Cuban people are really ready to revolt against Castro, we'll support that." So they invaded the Bay of Pigs, and the Cuban people come down to the beach, and they proceed to stomp the Cuban brigades and the CIA's mercenaries into the sand. They were sending a message. They didn't care how bad life was under Castro, really under the American embargo. It was still going to be better than any American puppet. And it was a huge slap in the face to the United States of America, and Kennedy pulled the plug. The CIA was saying, "You got to send in warships, you got to send in bombers, you've just got to send in the U.S. military." And Kennedy said, "I can't invade them. They haven't done anything to us. This was supposed to be a covert operation." And he pulled the plug, and the invasion fell apart, and they wound up having to send Cuba something like $5 million worth of medical supplies to ransom back the captive Cuban brigades from prison, and basically violated their own embargo to do so. Okay, I'm going to take a break. We're going to stay here for some commercials. When I come back, I'm going to finish up the story about Cuba and how that related to the breakup between Kennedy and the CIA. We'll be right back.
It's Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. Mark hung up. I want to finish the story about Cuba, Kennedy, and the CIA. It's germane to one of the parties that may have been intent on seeing him die. But we have to take a short break here because Brother Solomon from Brazil is on the phone, and I know it's an expensive call for him. So aloha, Brother Solomon. Como está? What's on your mind today?
Thank you very much for taking my call. Salvador, my querido hermano Rivera, I didn't want to interrupt your train of thought, but it was a great relief to hear you. I'm still angry, very well-oriented angry, but I want to say that it was a great relief when the last Monday I heard you coming back to the radio and to your program, because I think it was after a successful prison break from the reeducation camp the federal government sent you.
No, basically, I had to take a trip to California. It was a combination of business and pleasure, and the pleasure part was a new great niece named Leah, and I got to play with little tiny toes and make silly faces, and she kept looking at me like, who the heck are you, and do you have an appointment? But I got some great pictures of her.
But no, but listen, it was so sudden that at the beginning I thought the federal government lure you, entice you under the false pretense of work, but they got you to continental USA, and then after so many years working for a federal agency, they thought that probably you need to be reset to the brainwash because you are too dangerous, and you are successfully working in blowing up the trash cans list of their crimes, so... I think that they failed. They failed miserable because you came back more healthy, virulent.
Well, you know, I think the situation here is, I mean, I've been doing this for 16 years now. I mean, it's a very, very large chunk of my life I've devoted to what really happened. And in that entire 16 years, it has apparently never dawned on the government of either the United States or Israel or any of these other people that the more they interfere with my business and keep me out of work, the more time I have to be doing what really happened. So in 16 years, they've never realized that trying to wreck my career, and they have tried, has been counterproductive. But I guess if they had any brains, they wouldn't be working for the government anyway.
Brother Rivero, I want to make a very short comment here and contribute to your next assessment of Kennedy's assassination, etc., and give you my opinion. I think that since a long time ago, we live in a very extremist time. We live in an extremist country. We are surrounded by state terrorism that is oppressing us. And, and if we expect to have any kind of success in restoring the balance to this scale, we need to really abandon the idea of being moderate. So I might be sounding kind of extremist here, but if you allow me, I would really like to bring you my opinion about Kennedy's assassination.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you. Well, in my opinion, our nation, like many other nations, Brother Rivero, always have the urge to create legends, myths, heroes. And Kennedy is another case. In my opinion, I know that it will upset many people, he did no useful service to our fellow Americans. And worst case scenario, it was a terrible service. And we are where we are because of politicians like him or like Eisenhower. They have the opportunity to talk loud and clear to the audience, but they choose to treat us retarded. They could call a spade and request people mobilization to restore the republic, but they keep the secret, low voice, in their own quarters, and Kennedy could easily oust the Dallas for what he was, and the bankers and the militaries and the so-called wars, but as Eisenhower, we just accept their anecdotes and their images. He warned us about the military industrial complex. Well, that individual had the opportunity to jail all the ones who were involved in the crimes, but they decided to do the opposite because they, all of them, have stench, sticky, soiled diapers. Not even the actual politicians, the Brother Rivero, have courage and honesty. They are just puppets. They are puppets to make us believe that there are some kind of dissidence and openness. Example like Ron Paul or Kucinich are example of traitors to me, because they had more than once the public session, the floor of the House, in front of the whole world media to talk and talk and talk and present evidence, introduced to the congressional records about the state terrorist crimes like September 11th.
Okay, Brother Solomon, let me stop you here, because see, here's the problem, and this applies to all politicians, including the good ones like Traficant and Ron Paul. They're perfectly willing to go up there and talk about crimes of individuals, but nobody in the government is going to go up and ever talk about the really big crimes, because those delegitimize the entire government, and that gets everybody fired. And that's why no matter how good a person Ron Paul may appear to be, he's not going to get up and blow the whistle on 9/11. Because that would bring the whole government down, and then he is out of a job until we appoint him, you know, Lord High Protector of the Realm in the aftermath or something like that. Brother Solomon, we have got to let you go. The phone lines are loading up, and I do want to get back to the story on Cuba. So thank you very much, and have a good day. And that was Brother Solomon there in Brazil, and I'm sorry to cut him off, but I don't want to get pulled too far away from the story I was in the middle of for Mark from Oregon. And I know we've got Thomas waiting from Sweden. I'll get to you in just a minute, but I do want to finish up the story about Cuba. So anyway, we're down there in Cuba. It was supposed to appear to the world to be a revolution within Cuba, overthrowing Castro, counter-revolution bringing Batista back. The U.S. involvement was supposed to remain hidden. Then all of a sudden the CIA, they're losing on the Bay of Pigs, and they go to Kennedy and say, we've got to do a full American invasion to back this up. And Kennedy said, that's not what I signed up for. You know, we don't want to look to the world like we're invading Cuba. You know, we will covertly support what appears to be a counter-revolution. And so the whole thing fell apart. Kennedy issued an executive order transferring control of covert paramilitary operations from the CIA back to the Pentagon directly. Now, this executive order was never implemented, but this was basically Kennedy's first step to shatter the CIA and cast it into 1,000 pieces and cast it to the wind. That was his exact direct quote. He fired Alan Dulles, head of the CIA, in the aftermath of the Bay of Pigs, which a lot of people, remember we were talking about John J. McCloy winding up on the Warren Commission. Alan Dulles, the man that Kennedy fired, was also on the Warren Commission. All of Kennedy's enemies were represented on the Warren Commission. The bankers, the CIA, organized crime, they were all there guarding their vested interests. We're going to go to the phones. Thomas in Sweden, aloha, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Good morning, Mr. Rivera. I want to go into one thing that's even more tragic. At the very moment that President Kennedy was getting into the motorcade, he had an emissary in Cuba trying to, as he would often say in those days, get things moving again.
Yes. Oh, Kennedy was definitely doing. Yeah, go ahead. Finish up.
I want to touch on one other thing you said about how Castro turned to the United States, you know, trying to, you know, make buddy-buddy and so forth. This is exactly what Uncle Ho or Ho Chi Minh did. He turned to Eisenhower for help to throw the French out, and Eisenhower said, no, we can't do that. And at that point, Ho Chi Minh, he was just a nominal socialist, and then he turned to the Soviet Union and it went communist in Vietnam.
Yes, that's exactly right. We keep making these dumb mistakes. We take these hardline policies saying, our way or the highway, and they say, okay, we're going to go over to your enemy's side. And then we start screaming, they joined the enemy! We've got to conquer them and take them back. And it's just this ham-handed, heavy-handed approach to foreign policy that embroils us in war after war after war, in which we're trying to basically go back and conquer the people who didn't want to deal with us on our exact terms. And it's a very heavy-handed imperialistic approach. Now, getting back to this situation about approaching Cuba, one of the reasons Kennedy was such a threat to the status quo, he was talking about pulling out of Vietnam. He wanted to pull out the advisors. He was trying to approach Cuba and say, okay, maybe we need to rethink this. Okay, he'd just gotten done with the Cuban Missile Crisis. He basically promised Russia that he was not going to allow an invasion of Cuba again, which to the hardliners in the CIA, that was treason. Of course we're going to invade again. We're going to invade anybody we want to. And if the Russians want to have a nuclear war with us, by golly, we've got our bunkers already prepared. Let's start the shooting now. And, okay, we got to take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
We will not go down in the night. burn up our masks in our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're still talking with Thomas in Sweden. We're talking about Kennedy. And he really did want to change a lot of things. He was a threat to the status quo. He didn't get to do all that he wanted to do, but he was a threat. He wanted to basically, especially after the Cuban Missile Crisis, he wanted to tone things down with Russia. He wanted to pull back from the brink. He wanted to call off the moon race and say to the Russians, look, let's pool our resources. We'll both go to the moon, and it'll cost our nations only half as much, which made a lot of sense to a lot of people. Wanted to pull out of Vietnam. Wanted to start issuing U.S. Treasury currency again. Huge threat to the private banking cartels, the Federal Reserve. Made a deal with Russia to never invade Cuba again. That angered the CIA and the mafia, and it just went on and on and on. Kennedy was making the right decisions, but he was angering those people whose personal fortunes depended on the wrong decisions. He was canceling the oil depletion allowance for the Texas oil billionaires. I mean, these guys were making billions of dollars for leaving their oil in the ground and doing nothing with it. And Kennedy said, this is ridiculous. This is costing the American taxpayers billions of dollars. And so he was canceling that. And a lot of people think that the actual money for the assassination came from the Texas oil billionaires. Harrelson Lafayette Hunt, no relation to E. Howard Hunt, was set up with an airplane to leave the country on the day of the assassination. And people are saying, oh, why? Why are you trying to get out of the country? And finally, of course, Kennedy was adamant that Israel not be allowed to obtain nuclear weapons because of its belligerent history to its neighbors and the rest of the Middle East there. So the list just went on and on and on and on. And as I said, if you look carefully at the backgrounds of the people who were on the Warren Commission, you find that most of them had connections to the very vested interests Kennedy was a direct threat to.
Bingo. You said my next point. Gerald Ford was on the House either Select or Subcommittee Intelligence Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And he got his reward.
Oh, of course. And, you know, years later, when Richard Nixon was dealing with Watergate and he got rid of Spiro Agnew and they got Gerald Ford to be the vice president before Nixon stepped down. And Nixon stepped down because what everybody was afraid of, remember what I was telling the other caller, that a politician is not going to get into a secret that brings the whole government down because then their own job is on the line. The reason everybody wanted Nixon to resign was because they could never allow an impeachment trial in the Senate, because sooner or later somebody was going to ask a very important question. With Nixon's reelection against McGovern, a study in foregone conclusions, there was no way he was going to lose. Why did they feel they had to burglarize the Democratic National Headquarters? The answer to that question would have tracked right back to Dealey Plaza, November 22, 1963, where two of Richard Nixon's employees, henchmen, associate, whatever, E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis, were photographed as part of the group of tramps. Remember the tramps in Dealey Plaza that had new shoes and new clothes?
Not only that, Nixon was flying out of Dallas-Fort Worth Airport at that time. He supposedly was there representing PepsiCo.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And he was on his way out of the city when the assassination occurred. And years later, E. Howard Hunt sued Liberty Lobberty when those photos surfaced, and lost because they found witnesses that placed him in Dealey Plaza at the time of the assassination. So there was this whole ugly situation where if Nixon had gone to a trial in the Senate, it could possibly have ripped open the whole Kennedy assassination and shown that it was a conspiracy, that the entire government was involved. And so they got Gerald Ford, who'd been on the Warren Commission, the guy who himself had changed the location in the official report of Kennedy's wounds to make him line up with the magic bullet, because they knew that he would keep the secret. And, of course, as soon as Gerald Ford was president, he wrote pardons to everybody, effectively ending any further investigation into Watergate. And our great national healing can begin. And, you know, the bodies were put back into the ground and the soil shoveled over them. But that's basically how these things get done in the United States. When George Bush Sr. was vice president to Ronald Reagan, and they were running the guns and cocaine smuggling ring that became known as Iran-Contra, and George Bush knew he had to leave the White House after only one term, he arranged with his friends in the media and the CIA to literally throw the White House to the one Democrat he knew would keep the drug smuggling secret, Arkansas Governor Bill Clinton, because Arkansas had been the American side of the Iran-Contra pipeline. And that's how these things get passed off, you know, one and time again. Now, the reason this Climategate expose is so important is because this really illustrates that when a conspiracy gets going in the media, among the scientists, among the politicians, Al Gore, National Geographic, History Channel, it really is reaching throughout the entire society. And when you see an exposed cover-up like this, then you understand you have to accept the possibility there have been other such wide-ranging conspiracies. Remember, the most common argument you get when you talk about a conspiracy to kill John F. Kennedy or a conspiracy behind 9/11, they say, oh, a conspiracy that large couldn't possibly exist because people would spill the beans and stuff like this. Well, this Climategate expose proves that, yes, such large, all-encompassing conspiracies actually do exist, and they probably already have. Anything else for you, Thomas?
No, thank you. I've been hogging your phone long enough. Thank you very much in memory of the dearest and best. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Thomas. We're going to switch over to Bill in Ireland. Aloha, Bill. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi. Well, it's interesting you mentioned Kennedy. He was proclaimed the free man of Galway in 1963 in June when he was here. But aside from that, what I want to talk about is all law comes from the Bible. That's why the judges everybody had to stand up when they came into the courtroom. It comes from way back in medieval times when the usher used to hold the Bible over their head. But like in Genesis 1, 24 to 26, we're given dominion, a man is given dominion over the earth.
And we sure messed it up, didn't we?
What?
And we sure messed it up, didn't we?
Yeah, but we can claim that right. It's the laws, commercial laws, admiralty laws, what we're governed by in the commercial courts. It's not the common law. So the statutes, it's the same the world over. The statutes refer to artificial persons and individuals. Nobody can claim they're free if they pay the income tax.
I would agree with you on that one, and Abraham Lincoln certainly agreed that the artificial person of a corporation represented a dire threat to the existence of the Republic.
Yes, and if people go on freemanireland.ning.com, which is N-I-N-G, on our website there, we have a radio program every Sunday evening at 4 p.m. Eastern, and Wednesday evening as well, about this topic. It's not very well covered on GCN. I've been listening to it for a few years, but people are scared of the tax audits if they do anything. People are scared of all of the debts and the mounting debt they're under. Yeah, it's just a money game. You just have to know how to play it. And people that are receiving, people that claim their persons are obviously going to get into trouble. They're artificial persons. All of those type of letters should be returned to sender. With no contract written on it.
Okay, Bill, let me just cut in, because we're almost to the end of the segment here. You know, Bill, what you said about, you know, everybody's afraid of being audited, everyone's afraid of the IRS because they seem to be acting above the law with this idea of sovereign immunity and so forth and so on. But, you know, there's the downside of fear, at least from the point of those who use fear to rule the population. When people, you know, fear is very tiring. And you keep people afraid long enough, they stop being afraid because they don't have the energy to do it. And at that point, fear turns into anger. People hate the things that make them afraid. And I think that's what's happening here in the United States right now. We're tired of being afraid. We don't have the energy to be afraid anymore, but we sure have the energy and the will to be very, very angry. And again, that letter from the woman in Arizona sent to Glenn Beck yesterday really underscores that. So, Bill, thank you very much for the phone call. And, you know, we're going to let you go here because we're coming to the end of hour number one. When we come back in the next hour, we're going to be talking about Climategate. This is a huge story, not just because they're trying to cheat you out of your freedoms and money with this manufactured illusion of human-caused global warming, because it reveals that, yes, in point of fact, large-scale, coordinated conspiracies to deceive the public exist between government, funded science, and the media. This proves it once and for all. We'll be back after the news and commercials in about 7 minutes. Stay tuned and aloha, America.
The Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to hour number two of our show. In this hour, I want to get back onto this ClimateGate story. And the reason that I want to do that is I think this is really a very important story right now. Not just because this vindicates those of us who've been saying for years that global warming was just a gigantic hoax. It was a money-making opportunity. It was a scam. And, you know, I think at this point I have to give a tip of the hat to Michael Crichton, who unfortunately, sadly, passed away and did not live to see this. He wrote a wonderful, wonderful book called State of Fear. You're never going to see it made into a movie. And in this book, he basically laid out that the whole global warming hysteria existed to make money for certain private corporations, to allow certain lawyers to gratuitously sue people over the fact that the Earth has a climate that's changing. And that is really how politics works in the world. Politicians will get up, they'll see something that's just sort of happening. You know, climate's changing. It's getting warmer. It's getting colder. Who knows? Doesn't matter. It's something that the politician would say, oh, my stars in heaven, the Earth is getting warmer. It's a crisis. It's an emergency. If left unchecked, it will be the end of us all. Therefore, I am proposing that if you will pay this tax, and you've heard this all before. You've heard this all before. This is how it works. It's called the Hegelian dialectic. Create a crisis or point to something that you can claim is a crisis and then sell the solution to it. Now, the global warming cult, Al Gore and company, have tried to reposition and rebrand themselves by saying that they are trying to deal with dramatic climate change. Well, the rebranding isn't working because we remember that only a short while ago, they were screaming about a warming Earth and it was all the fault of the humans. We know from our eyes, from the weather report you just heard on the radio break coming into this hour of the show, it's actually cold and getting colder. The Earth has been in a cooling trend for the last 8 years. 8 years. So they're saying, okay, we can't use global warming anymore, but we're going to talk about climate change. But it doesn't matter. They blew the call. One of the guys, one of Al Gore's closest advisors who's screaming about global warming now, back in the 70s, was leading the chorus of voices saying we were on the verge of a new ice age. Give me funding, give me funding, give me funding. If you look at that video, the Great Global Warming Hoax, and I will find it and relink it to what really happened after the show today. There's this wonderful interview in there where they're talking to a scientist, and he says basically science was skewed by how much money was being thrown at global warming. If you were studying squirrels and how they gather nuts for the winter, and you wrote a proposal, I want to study how squirrels gather nuts for the winter, your proposal is probably not going to go anywhere. You're not going to get the money, and that will be the end of it. But if you say, I want to study how squirrels are gathering nuts for the winter, as impacted by global warming, it was a guarantee you'd get the money. It's called the golden rule of science. It certainly didn't begin with Al Gore. Whoever's got the gold determines the direction the science is going. If you've got money to pay scientists to research global warming, you're going to find a lot of people standing up and saying, yes, I can do that. I can research global warming. So what they did is they took a whole bunch of these scientists who are on grants to study human-caused global warming, and they piled them together into this big building called the University of Anglia's Hadley Climate Research Unit. And they say, okay, these people have all the data. They are the voice of scientific authority on the claim that humans are warming up the Earth and must be controlled. Now we have a cache, if you will, of documents and emails that have apparently been leaked by a whistleblower inside the unit. Other stories are saying it was a hacker. It's looking more and more like this was a whistleblower, because whoever it was knew right where to go to get the documents they needed. I mean, this is an incredible treasure trove of material. It's posted on the net several places. We have a link to one place at whatreallyhappened.com. I'm in the process of preparing a fully indexed hierarchical display of all of this stuff so that you can go through and search it and look for this material yourself, like we did with Deborah Palfrey's telephone list. We set up that little searchable index for that. We're doing the same thing with these files this weekend. So basically going through, I mean, the stuff that they found, I mean, these emails are openly talking about tricks of ways to manipulate the data in order to get the results they want. They're not taking the data points and drawing the curves. They're drawing the curves and then finding the data that fits the data points. That's not science. That's propaganda. These emails reveal that these scientists at the CRU knew the Earth was cooling down. They talk about ways to hide it, of sampling the available data in such a way that they conceal certain things that are contrary to the desired agenda. These emails basically blow the lid off the CRU. And remember, this is not the first time. The CRU is the unit that last August, when other scientists around the world said, we want to see the raw data, not after it's been smoothed and filtered and analyzed and tweaked and statistically massaged by the CRU. We want the raw data. And the CRU stalled and stalled and stalled, and finally they come out and they said, well, we don't have the raw data anymore. You know, we threw it out. Once we finished this nice bound volume set autographed by Al Gore himself, we don't need the raw data anymore. We just didn't have room for it. That's ridiculous. In this era of terabyte, you know, bookshelf disk drives, that excuse simply does not wash, that they don't have storage space for all of this data. It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So they were scandalized by the fact that they'd thrown away the raw data so that nobody could check their work. And now we have these files and emails where they're openly talking about collusion, conspiracy, if you will, to make sure that scientific papers from scientists that point in a different direction, like, hey, the Earth has been cooling for 8 years, were never allowed in peer-reviewed journals, were blocked from presentation at the conferences. This isn't science. This is not science. Science depends on reproducibility. Science depends on a consensus. It's supposed to be democratic. It isn't supposed to be one scientist with a bunch of money in politics telling all the other scientists, shut the heck up. We have already decided we're going to sell this to the people, and you will not stand in our way. This is not a smoking gun. This is a mushroom cloud. Now, of course, you can count on government to pretend like this never happened, just as they pretended last summer that CRU hadn't been busted for destroying the original raw data so that nobody could double-check their results. Next month, they're going into this Copenhagen conference. They're going to try and sell the next pillar for global government on this claim that the climate is changing and humans are causing it. Right now, we have in front of us this proof that the global warming hysteria was manufactured. I think it was about 2 months ago we had a video of the former head of Greenpeace admitting on camera. They just made up this whole thing about Greenland losing its ice cap in 20 years. I mean, anybody who knows thermodynamics, a little back-of-the-envelope calculation, you would understand there's no way Greenland is going to lose its entire ice mass over a 0.4 degree increase in the next 20 years. There's just way too much energy required to do that. You couldn't de-ice Greenland with all of the world's nuclear weapons being set off on it right now. It just isn't going to happen. And so they challenged this guy and he says, well, we had to come up with something to motivate the people. Well, when you have to come up with something to motivate the people, that's called lying. Actually, there's another word for it, but I can't use it, or the FCC will take away our license. But that's what they're doing. They're creating the illusion of a crisis to sell you the solution for more taxes and more control over your life. Now, the good news is, because this is the big story all over the blogosphere and alternative media, even the corporate media is having to pay attention. Not the TV networks. I haven't seen it there. I've been looking around the dial. And by the way, History Channel is still showing nothing but war, war, war. War is great. Hitler, Hitler, Hitler. War, war. Nostradamus. History of sex. War, 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 war. That's their schedule. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with Climate Gate after these words from our sponsors. Join us on the air, 800-259-9231, and we'll be right back.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone. I mean, the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. I was looking at the History Channel. I'm not kidding. They're showing Adolf Hitler again. I put the webcam on it, but it's a copyright violation. It is nonstop selling us about the Great War, and we were the greatest generation, and we went out there, and we gave the Japanese and the Germans what for, and we're really good, and we're the, you know. And they're trying to glorify and glamorize war so hard, guys. So like I said the other day, if an alien civilization is intercepting our TV and they're picking up the History Channel, they're going to think that the entire history of the human race fits into 20 years in the middle of the last century and that nothing of any importance at all happened either before or after that. It really is amazing how blatant war, 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 Nazis, Hitler, Holocaust, some Nostradamus, war, 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 war. Let's see, and they're just, and the copy on this one is basically, an, oh, we, you know, we should have been better prepared when the enemy was out there. All right, we're going to, I'm going to step away from climate gate. We got another caller on the line. Mike in Georgia, aloha. Mike, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Well, if nobody else has done it, I wanted to be the first to wish you a happy End the Fed Day.
You got it.
In that same idea here, I'm intending to take my son to Jekyll Island here and kind of present, you know, I've already shown him a video with Edward Griffin in it and kind of familiarized him with contemporary political history. And I was going to suggest that some of the people that are out protesting this that are in Georgia and in the Savannah area and in that region might want to go there and maybe take some shots and email them to you and kind of show that people in general are becoming more aware of this and to help them familiarize with this history that was, you know, kind of been kept secret.
Well, that's a very important thing here because, you know, obviously we are seeing the corporate media is attempting to downplay all the protests and all the concern, especially because now we're talking about the money. Now that we're talking about the money, they're going to turn a completely blind eye to this whole thing. It's going to be football games and war and Iran and all this other stuff. So if, and this is for everybody listening to this right now, if you are going to a, never mind, when you go to a protest, take along your signs, your t-shirts, take pictures, send them. I will put up, as I always do, huge pages of photos from the listeners and readers of these various protests around there. There's a little deal in there. If you are wearing a What Really Happened t-shirt, or you're carrying a sign that says What Really Happened on it, and you take a picture and you send that in. The first picture to come into me from tomorrow's protests, the first picture of a What Really Happened sign or t-shirt coming from the protest gets a free What Really Happened coffee mug. Okay? If I had the money, I'd give out 100 of them. I don't, but I can afford to give out one free. Brand new. Hasn't had my coffee in it or anything like that. Go right to you from Cafe Press. So that's the deal there if you'll send that in. But otherwise, yeah, please send pictures. Send pictures from Jekyll Island. And, you know, we need to show everybody the birthplace of the biggest scam in America's history. Because it is a pyramid scheme.
It is a state park now, too. So, you know, that kind of enhances the idea of visiting it. And it's a very, you know, it's a great place. That's why they met down there.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought I'd mention that, you know, because like I say, I'm close to it, so I don't know if I'm going to make it tomorrow or not, but I'm intending to go there and show my son the Den of the Serpent and where this was conceived at.
I think there's a plaque right on the wall of the room that says, you know, this is the birthplace of the Federal Reserve.
Yes, I think everybody needs to be aware of it. And it's a history that, you know, until Mr. Griffin came forward and some others, you know, was pretty well concealed.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the really, you know, they're trying to conceal the real secrets. But I think because of the blogs and the alternative media, these secrets are coming out. And more, as more of these secrets are exposed, the more people are willing to understand that, yeah, they're the most lied to people on the face of the earth. Like I said, I'm going to pound on this ClimateGate situation, not just because it vindicates that we were right about it being a scam, but because this completely destroys the claim that large conspiracies cannot possibly exist, because when you have that many people in them, somebody will blow the whistle. Well, in this case, somebody did. But when you look back over the last several years at all the people who jumped on board, human-caused global warming, National Geographic, History Channel, all the major TV networks, all the newspapers, all the magazines, they were all in on this. And then the Earth got colder for 8 years in a row, and we're finding out now that the CRU, that's supposed to be the authoritative, scholastic, academic, scientific source for all of this stuff, knew it was getting cooler, and were trying to conceal it. And so,
well,
yes. Yeah.
I'd like to suggest one more thing, is that when you start talking about lying, that you break it into two groups of lies. Lies and stupid lies.
All lies are stupid. I'm sorry. There's no such thing as a smart lie. There are lies that have a benefit for a short amount of time, but ultimately, all lies are stupid.
Because cunning liars, though, and some of it is just insulting, and this stuff that's been going on is mostly insulting. It's ignorant.
Well, I'm certainly trying to sell us that Iran is a threat for nuclear weapons. I mean, after falling flat on their face with the same lie about Iraq, that's stupid and insulting as well.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks an awful lot for the phone call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All righty. Anyway, if you look all over the net, this ClimateGate, this is the big story today on the Internet, and it is forcing its way onto some of the corporate media. Wall Street Journal had to cover it. New York Times ran a story in which they're saying that climate skeptics are saying that these emails prove there's collusion. Read the emails for yourself. They're gloating over the death of critics. They're talking about, please destroy this file or this data. Can we resample the data in such a way that it doesn't show XYZ happening? I mean, it's blatant. These people were actively working together to create the illusion of human-caused global warming, to sell you a new tax, to sell you a global government. I think we're going to see a huge, huge push on that global government agenda. We saw it today with the new president of the European Union coming out and saying today's the first day of global governance. No, it isn't. Not if you can't get Israel under control. But they're going to try and sell you the need for a global government because of the global warming crisis, which we now know is a hoax, because of the global pandemic, which isn't pandemicking all that much, and the global financial crisis. And that one's going to be a tough sell, because most people understand globalism is what turned an American economic crisis into a global calamity. And selling more globalism as the solution doesn't make a lot of sense. It's like backing the Titanic up and whacking that iceberg on the other side to see if we can straighten the bow out. So the three pillars on which they wanted to base a global government are all collapsing. Now they're just going to try and steamroller through. And the only people who can stop it are you. I don't want a global government. I've detailed that for a lot of reasons. I don't want to do that. And you shouldn't either. And the shortest version is simply global governance. That's what Hitler wanted. It's what Stalin wanted. It's what the Roman Caesars wanted. Alexander the Great wanted global government. Napoleon wanted global government. Every time somebody comes along and says global government, boy, are we in trouble here. All right, we got to take a break for some commercials. When we come back, we'll be talking to John in Pennsylvania about auditing the Federal Reserve. And we'll be right back.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far $5.15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're going to be talking about auditing the Federal Reserve. Before we get to the caller, though, in the chat room, they were saying, forget the audit. Let's go right to the gallows. And I understand that anger there. What we should understand from this fight over the Watt Amendment and all the people in Congress who are getting money from the financial industry right now, the Federal Reserve is going to fight this audit tooth and nail. They have implied that they will crash the economy before they allow a full audit. I would not even be surprised if there was a sudden mysterious fire that destroyed the relevant records. Because when you have the owner of a company or a bank, and they've been cheating the people, and the examiners start to show up, oh my goodness, we had a fire. I'm so sorry. The records are gone. Can't do anything. My bad. Had a fire. It's very obvious they're going to do whatever they can. Lie, cheat, steal, kill, set fire to the building, burn it all down, crash the economy, rather than allow the American people to see how badly they have been cheated by this pyramid scheme. Now, Bernie Madoff is in jail over his pyramid scheme, $65 billion. The Federal Reserve is an almost 100-year-old pyramid scheme, trillions and trillions of dollars of your labor has been siphoned off into this privately owned bank to make these incredibly wealthy people wealthier. And when the American people find it, because that's not the way this country was set up. It was set up with the government issuing the currency for the use of the people, interest-free. The money was simply put into circulation to drive commerce. Government made sure that the monetary unit was stable and dependable and reliable. The money was based on silver. That's why they call it a dollar. It's from the Thaler mines of Germany, a weight measure of silver. We've had three central banks. All three of them have nearly destroyed the country. The first two were shut down. It's time to shut this one down. The audit will show the American people, for all the work they have done over the last 100 years, how little real worth and value remains in their hands, and how much the overwhelming majority of the real wealth of this nation has been put into the hands of these private bankers whose only service was to run a printing press. They didn't dip into their own pocket and loan out gold and silver. They turned on a printing press. Actually, they had the U.S. Treasury print up the Federal Reserve notes, and they loaned those to you. The money doesn't even exist until you sign a loan document at the bank. And they type a number on a computer, and all of a sudden, there's a bunch of zeros added to your bank account that you're able to go out and spend. And then you have to work and repay at full face value plus interest back to the bank. It's a legalized counterfeiting operation. It's a pyramid. Because the instant that first Federal Reserve note goes into circulation, more money is owed to the bank than is actually in existence. This mandates recessions and depressions over and over and over again. There'll be inflation, recession, inflation, recession. It is a gigantic heartbeat that pumps real wealth away from the people and into the hands of the private bankers. Okay, I've kept John in Pennsylvania waiting long enough. Aloha, John. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? John, are you there? Okay, I guess John hung up. There you are. My goodness. All right. Okay, what's up?
I think you're absolutely right about everything you said, and I think what Max Kaiser said is spot on, too. It's like the old Woody Allen joke where the guy takes his brother to the doctor and says, hey, doctor, my brother thinks he's a chicken, and the doctor says, all right, well, we'll give him some pills and make him stop thinking he's a chicken, and the brother says, yeah, but we need the egg.
Yeah.
Like, as much as I think, auditing the Fed and abolishing the Fed is in America's best interest, we do need them to extend because they can crash the economy, and we have to be wary that it's getting
No. You're wrong there, because Barack Obama has the legal authority under the Constitution to order the Treasury Department to issue new currency that would be legal tender.
We know he's not going to do that, though.
Well, then we got to get somebody in there who can. Alternatively, John, listen to me. Or the states can issue their own currency, or the local communities can issue their own currency. I mean, we the people can decide what money we're willing to accept. And if we decide we don't want to use the Federal Reserve notes anymore, we're already seeing people go back to barter. We're already seeing local communities issue their own currency. It's already starting to happen. The Liberty dollar was doing very, very well until they put Ron Paul's face on it, and then George Bush got his feelings hurt and sicked the Treasury Department on him. But money is whatever people are willing to trade with, and we don't need the Federal Reserve note. It was handed to us as a convenience, but when Americans realize just how much those Federal Reserve notes have cost them over the last almost 100 years, they're going to be ready to just say, here, Federal Reserve, take them back. We're going to create our own money. We don't need you. And the government can't force us to use your notes from a private bank in violation of the Constitution.
Well, I think it's important that, you know, we realize, okay, the Fed crashes the economy, and then for a certain period of time, we're in a, you know, a time of chaos and such, and then the government turns around and says, okay, well, we can turn to someone like the IMF and use their notes, or use that, which would be even worse than having
okay,
the Federal
Reserve. Okay, well, John, I think you're wrong, because first of all, what the Federal Reserve, when the Federal Reserve's threatening to crash the economy, what they're threatening to do is to crash the banking system. And the reality is that prior to the establishment of the Federal Reserve, it was possible for Americans to live their entire life without having to deal with the bank, as long as there was some kind of monetary unit that was in general acceptance among the population. If the banking system crashes, it will likely take the U.S. government with it. And so the solution is, yeah, let's end the Fed and let it crash, and let's set up a new government and a treasury system along the lines of the Constitution, and have them start issuing the currency, because that's what worked for the people. The European banking families can't stand the idea of a nation having its own money. And that's what all of this trouble in the United States has been through three private central banks and a bunch of wars and several assassinations. It's been about whether the people of the United States will have their own money or whether we're forced to go to a bank to borrow it. And I think we've had enough of being forced to go to a bank to borrow it. And I think that sentiment we saw in the chat room about skip the audit, let's go right to the hangings, I think that's a common one. I don't think an audit's going to accomplish anything, because the Federal Reserve is never going to allow it to happen. They'll cheat the books, they'll burn records, they'll shred files, they'll just stall and stall and stall and drag it out. You know, with all due respect to Ron Paul, and I admire him and I will support him if he runs in 2012, but I think this audit is a waste of time. I think it's, let's skip that, go right to shut the Federal Reserve down. It's a private bank. We don't need it. The Constitution says the U.S. government can issue its own money. It is time to do that. If Barack Obama doesn't have the gonadal tissue to do it, let's get somebody in there who can. There are already people talking about impeachment of this guy. I'm ready to impeach the entire government. Let's kick them all out. Let's put in some politicians or some leaders. Forget politicians. Let's put in some leaders who are going to think about doing what's best for the American people, because we have not had that in a long time. In fact, I think they're an endangered species.
I could not agree with you more, but I think that the majority of the people are going to say, you know, if I could do all that without having to suffer, you know, with my family and my life, then I'd be all for it. But I think that most people aren't going to be willing to make the sacrifices that are necessary to go through that process. Even though,
John, we're already making that sacrifice to go through that process. We've got 50 million Americans can't get enough food to eat. My wife and I just got involved with yet another local charity for homelessness. I mean, John, I don't know where you live and what your circumstance is. We're already in that process, and it's going to get worse. Going along with the Federal Reserve isn't buying us a better lifestyle. It is dragging us down. So if we're going to have to go, if we're going to have to go through that pain anyway, let's go in a direction that benefits the people, not sends more of our money to the bankers. John, thank you for the call. We got to take a break. We'll be back with the last segment of our show after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Aloha, America, welcome back. Last segment of our show today, it's gone by so fast. I had a huge list of talking points. We didn't get to any of them. I'm going to try and wrap up a few. I'm still watching History Channel. It is still all about how great war is. And yes, a war, world war is just wonderful because we won it and we did, and we show the, and they're just, you know, it just, it's so scary to see them just constantly pounding, you know, how good World War II was. Like 60 million people dead. That's not a good thing. It's really not. Europe destroyed. Japan destroyed. I'm sorry. War is dumb. War is what happens when politicians run out of good ideas. Speaking of war, Gates is out there saying that the U.S. is ready to escalate quickly in Afghanistan. And again, as things deteriorate at home, they're out there trying to get another war going. They seem to think a war is the only thing that's going to save them from the wrath of the American people here. The U.S. is making contingency plans to invade Pakistan and seize their nuclear weapons if it looks like the government is going to fall. So we're getting ready to just invade just about everybody. Now, interestingly enough, over in Iraq, there was a case a while back where in 2007 there was a Blackwater. Now they call them Z. Remember, these are the guys who are convinced God wants them to go out and kill Muslims. And one of their Blackwater security guards was involved in a shooting in which 17 Iraqis were killed. Today, the Justice Department dropped charges against this guy. Okay? Now, I just want you to think about something. Over at Fort Hood, we've got Lee Harvey Hassan, who's going to be given this national media show trial for shooting 12 people. And over in Iraq, this Blackwater guard takes a walk on killing 17. Now, you think about that one for a while. I want to talk about justice being unequally applied. There's a very good example there. Speaking of justice unequally applied, Fernando Bermudez, 40 years old, just walked out of prison after spending almost half of his life in prison for a crime it turns out he did not commit. And he came out and hugged his wife and smiled and, you know, was beginning his life as a free man. And, you know, and he's 40. He's lost most of his youth inside that prison. He's been in there almost half his life. I presume somewhere along the line there will be a lawsuit and a settlement for being wrongfully jailed. But the reason I'm bringing this up is very simple. This is why I cannot support the death penalty. This case, and so many others like it, the justice system makes mistakes. The justice system screws up. Political pressure, a desire for high conviction rate, the wrong people can get sent to jail. Police and prosecutors and lawyers and whatever, eager to keep their jobs, they'll cover up mistakes and flawed evidence. If you wrongfully imprison somebody, you can always give them back their freedom, if not their youth. Unless they die in prison like James Earl Ray. But once you wrongfully execute someone, there is no going back. Until we can give back life to those who've had it taken from them through error by the state, we should not be in such a rush to take that life away in the first place. The other reason for the death penalty as a deterrent to crime doesn't seem to work, especially the way it's done in the United States, where the condemned are just kept for appeal and appeal and appeal. We have people who die of old age before the appeals process runs out. I know down in Texas, Ron White jokes about putting in an express lane for executions. But the bottom line is that until you can guarantee to me 100% that the guilty are being executed, and only the guilty are being executed, then you're going to have to count me out on that. You would have to count me out on that. Fernando Bermudez is a reminder. Our court system is deeply flawed. Innocent people get sent to jail. Guilty people get set free. Many of them are in Congress. So. Now, over in Israel, Israel's always being a pain in the tuchus. They're talking about peace talks between Israel and Syria, and Syria says, well, the first thing before we sit down, you got to give us back the Golan Heights. And Israel says, no, we can't have any preconditions for talks. That's ridiculous. this is the same Israel that says the precondition for any peace talks anywhere in the Middle East is that they recognize Israel's right to exist, even though Israel won't actually say where its borders are, and therefore you really don't know what it is you're saying has a right to exist. All right, we're going to go to the phones. We've got Jeremy in Idaho. Aloha, Jeremy. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Excuse me, sir?
I said hello. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to thank Neil Fallon for joining the show today. It's an amazing man, one of the hardest working bands in the business. Just so glad to see those guys getting where they needed to go.
Which one of our callers was that? I don't remember Neil being on the show.
Oh, I must have called. I was calling for Alex.
No, Alex is not here
today. I'd love to help.
Okay, well, we're talking about Climate Gate. We're talking about the Federal Reserve. This is the What Really Happened radio show.
Well, aren't they really just two in the same?
We're closely allied, but we don't have the band on. I'm sorry.
I've just had a hard time believing anything Al Gore has to say after he sold us NAFTA.
You're right about that. I mean, Al Gore, what a joke. I remember back the last time when he was trying to run for president against Bush. He went up to New Hampshire. I'm from New Hampshire. They were in the middle of a drought, and he arranges for them to, like, let go something like 50 million gallons out of a dam so that there can be enough water in this lake for him to get a picture of himself paddling a canoe, like he really knows how to handle a canoe. And it was like 50 million gallons, and they're in the middle of a drought. I mean, his house, if you ever see his house, talk about a carbon footprint that is excessive.
Well,
you
paid by strip mining.
Yes, absolutely.
It's just a joke. But it's just, you know, it's just very apparent. I mean, this is a man who I cast the vote for in 2000 before I came fully aware. You know,
vote for them. It just seems to encourage them.
You know, I don't. I cast for Ron Paul this last election, and I believe I made the right decision.
Well, I think you did, and we're finding out more and more that he got cheated. You know, we had that article about a week ago where they...
Yeah, how many votes did he get anyway?
Well, we still don't know. They're still doing recounts this, you know, a year after the election, then the primary, more than a year after the primaries, and they're still going back and recounting and saying, oh, my stars in heaven, he actually had more delegates. You know. Anyway, Jeremy, thanks an awful lot, and, you know, call into Alex's show some other time and, you know, talk to them about the band. All right, Jeremy,
thanks an awful lot.
Made a mistake on that little telephone dial, I guess. All righty, we're almost to the end of the show today. What I want to talk about, Jim Traficant came out today with an article, and it's linked to whatreallyhappened.com. Demjanjuk fights for life. Now, when this situation where John Demjanjuk was first arrested, taken to Israel, convicted, sentenced to die, then they had to let him go because they found out they were looking at the wrong guy. And so Demjanjuk came back home. And, of course, Israel, which can never be seen to be wrong in the eyes of the world, has come back at him for another try, and he's now back in Germany once again in jeopardy of his life because of these allegations. And Jim Traficant wrote an article about back when he was still in office, before he got railroaded into prison, and how when he wanted to help Demjanjuk with the first set of charges, where everybody in Washington said, the Israeli lobby will destroy you. They'll drive you out of power. They'll do worse. If they've accused somebody of a Holocaust crime, you can't go near them. It's such a horrible accusation. Even innocence isn't a defense. Don't go near him. Yes, he may be innocent. Let him sacrifice to save your own career. And, of course, Jim Traficant weighed in and got involved, and of course subsequently between that and his attacks on the Federal Reserve, Traficant was railroaded into prison, and now he's back out and he's starting to smash derbies and you know, basically get involved in the public fight again. There's a guy with some real courage. We have very, very few of them. I would wager a whole nickel that if Traficant or Ron Paul were president, they'd be on that phone to the Treasury Department right now saying, start printing up a new currency. We need a new legal tender in this country that does not enslave the white people, or the black people, or the brown people, or the red people, or the peach topper mob people. There's a man of rare courage. We need him back in public life, I think. I think we really do. All right, that's it for our show. Have a good weekend. Have a good Sunday. Next week, we're coming up on the holiday season and everything. We're going to be watching Climate Gate. Until Monday, stay safe, drive carefully, hug your loved ones, lots of cinnamon, stay skeptical, stay angry, and aloha, America.